And good morning. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Friday, March 26th. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
There will come a day when there are more people in the gun violence prevention movement than out of it.
Hopelessness is like another emotion. It's the best thing to do is to not hide away from them, but to engage them.
This is not the first time the mass shooting happened in my community, and I have to build some sort of protection to not fall apart.
And those are some of the voices you'll hear this morning on KGNU's magazine. When Grandmothers Against Gun Violence formed in 2012, they thought their cause made so much sense that they would only need to exist for a few years. Nearly 9 years later, the founder says the Boulder shooting and others are discouraging, but they won't give up fighting for a safer world for grandchildren. Then, after a mass shooting in a community like ours, mental health is improved with the help of community connections and continuing access to mental health support. We'll learn more about that coming up. Then, many Boulder residents have felt compelled to write about their feelings after Monday's shootings. We've captured one of those heartfelt essays, and we'll share it with you this morning. Near the bottom of the hour, it's Trends Diary. Today, we'll hear from Zach Weaver and his need to create objects for better living and how the Building 61 makerspace at the downtown Boulder Library has helped. Connections comes your way at 8:30 this morning. Host Fiona Foster will be in and will interview Pi Fry, a nationally renowned trauma therapist and brain spotting expert, and we'll talk more about this week's shooting and its aftermath. That will be followed by the Morning Sound Alternative until noon today, and that will be with Ginger Perry this morning, again until noon today. First, this morning, we're going to start with headlines. The man accused of killing 10 people at Boulder King Superstore on Monday made his first court appearance yesterday. Defense attorneys for 21-year-old Ahmed Alissa asked for more time to assess their client's mental health status before filing more charges. The Boulder district judge said 11 charges have been filed, 10 first-degree murder charges and one attempted first-degree murder charge for threatening the life of Officer Richard Stidell during the Monday shooting. Meanwhile, Colorado U.S. Representative Joe Nagoo sent a letter signed by 60 lawmakers to President Joe Biden Thursday calling for a ban on certain types of guns. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Congressman Nagoose's letter, sent Thursday, urges President Biden to ban semi-automatic rifles and high-capacity ammunition magazines that are imported from abroad. The Denver Post reports that Nagoose, who represents Colorado's 2nd Congressional District in Congress, is looking for Biden to issue an executive order to ban imported guns and ammunition, which is within the president's jurisdiction to enact a ban immediately. A wider ban on guns and ammunition would have to get Congress's approval. An estimation from the National Shooting Sports Foundation says that about 3.3 million firearms were imported to the United States in 2019, including over 300,000 rifles. This is on top of about 6 million firearms produced domestically that same year, with about 2 million being rifles. Nagoose's letter said that as the U.S. goes through the health and economic crises due to the COVID-19 pandemic, simultaneously there is the battle with rising violence caused by access to dangerous firearms. Nagoose is also working closely with the House Judiciary Committee and colleagues in Congress for action to reinstate the assault weapons ban. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
There have been several vigils in recent days for the 10 who died, including one at Fairview High School last night. Another will be held this Sunday at 7 p.m. in Lyons at the Sandstone Park. The vigil last night honored victims, families, and support personnel involved in the tragedy and was led by Moms Demand Action. More than 1,000 people attended in South Boulder. Also, that memorial service for the officer who was killed, Eric Talley, has been announced, and it will be Tuesday at 11 a.m. at the Flatirons Church in Lafayette. The service is open to the public, but attendance will be limited due to COVID-19 restrictions. Boulder police sent a tweet on Thursday in which they revealed that when the suspect was taken into custody on Monday, they used Officer Talley's handcuffs to do that. In addition to Officer Talley, others killed were 20-year-old Denny Stong, 23-year-old Nevin Stanisic, 25-year-old Ricky Olds, Trelona Bartokiak, age 49, 51-year-old Terry Liker, 59-year-old Suzanne Fountain, Kevin Mahoney, age 61, Lynn Murray, 62, and 65-year-old Jody Waters. Since Monday, starting with Colorado Governor Jared Polis, many have expressed frustration that a grocery store was the site of the shooting, where so many frontline workers have diligently gone to work during the pandemic to make sure the rest of us could get what we needed to cook meals at home. Here's Boulder Mayor Sam Weaver.
Our grocery stores have been a linchpin institution for us as we've gone through COVID. Obviously, you know, everyone has to eat, and obviously the people who work at King Soopers and Safeway and Lucky's and Whole Foods and all of our grocery stores, they have gone in and done the work to keep us all fed. And it is doubly sad that those workers are the ones who bore the brunt of the trauma, and one of the people killed was a King Soopers employee. So it is very sad on a lot of levels.
Boulder City Council had scheduled 2 weeks off from the business of the city prior to Monday's shooting before holding a special session Wednesday night to hear from lawmakers and allow citizens to share their thoughts about what had happened. Council is scheduled to take up several issues in April, multiple issues and pressing interest issues. But Weaver has said that Monday's event has put all of those problems in perspective for him.
This kind of event puts everything in perspective, right? And we do have challenges with housing and homelessness and some increase in crime. And, you know, there's the kind of normal growth and development challenges that we face in Boulder. We're discussing CU South. And, you know, everyone gets very worked up about these issues, and they are important and they take on an importance. But when something like this happens, where we're talking about people losing their lives, it puts those other challenges in perspective. And I do not like the way that we get here when these fatal events occur, but the best we can do with them is realize that the challenges that divide us on things like housing are challenges that we can rise to, but they do not need to lead us to be polarized like the rest of the country is politically. You know, we need to recognize that even when we disagree about housing or we disagree about homelessness, that those are simply civic disagreements, and they do not rise to the level of the tragedy that happens when 10 people are killed in our town. I mean, they're just night and day kinds of different problems.
Again, that was Mayor Sam Weaver. The weather along the Front Range today, mostly cloudy skies with a high of 47 and an overnight low of 28, 60% chance of rain and snow showers. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies with a high of 51 and overnight low of 31. Then by Sunday, sunny skies with a high of 62. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, we have 35 degrees. It's 8:12. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. When a mass shooting like the one that killed 10 in Boulder this week occur, many groups working to curtail the easy access to guns come forward to offer insights in what they've learned. Grandmothers Against Gun Violence is one of those, a group based in Seattle with members in 30-plus states, including Colorado.
Grandmothers Against Gun Violence formed in 2012 after a lone gunman killed 26 people, including 20 children between 6 and 7 years old and 6 adults. It was the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Newton, Connecticut. Founder of the group, Margaret Heldring, said after so many children were killed, she sincerely thought it wouldn't take Congress long to recognize that gun laws needed to change. But it's going on 9 years since the grassroots group formed, and Heldring says while some individual states have made progress in passing comprehensive gun safety and laws to reduce gun violence, at the national level, the needle has barely moved.
Right now, we feel discouraged because over the last year, 2020, gun sales have increased, episodes of gun violence, gun tragedies have also increased, and then in the last, 2 weeks, we've seen 18 deaths. And meanwhile, the U.S. Senate held its first hearing Tuesday, but that is unlikely to result in any action. So we have moved between encouragement and discouragement over these years. Right now, it's a moment of discouragement, sorrow, almost a kind of disbelief that this country cannot get it together to solve this problem, or at least even to take on this problem. And so we are beginning to wonder if the legislative route, whether at the state level or the national level, is the best route. And we are beginning to think about what are other ways we can take on this problem. It's almost as if we cannot wait for legislators, elected officials to act. People are dying. It's urgent. It's not a casual matter. So I think it is baffling to the average American mind and to those of us. I mean, I certainly have, I think, an average mind, but I've been around doing this, as you say, for 8 years. It is very baffling, but that's no reason to stop. And here's why. Because there will come a day when there are more people in the gun violence prevention movement than out of it. And that will be useful. There will also, as we saw from issues like marriage equality, there will be eventually a kind of cultural shift, a kind of cultural maturation, where more and more people and elected officials responding to pressure from people begin to say, oh my gosh, this really is a serious problem. And it's kind of the inverse of the marriage equality, which was, oh yeah, love is love is love. Yeah, we should do this. This is, oh my gosh, guns are guns are guns. We better do something about it. But I guess the reality is that it's taking longer and will take longer than it should, and that people can, including all of us working on it, can understand. And it cannot be laid entirely at the feet of the NRA right now, because the NRA is basically weakened. They are not the big player anymore that they were 8 years ago. However, the mentality of too many people is still this strange kind of Second Amendment liberty gives me my rights. Don't mess with my rights. Don't tell me I have to wear a mask. Don't tell me I have to get vaccinated. Don't tell me I can't carry my gun. That's what we're up against. That's really what we're up against.
Boulder recently learned what it was up against when a judge tossed out the city's 2018 ban on the sale and possession of assault weapons, high-capacity magazines, and bump stock devices. At the time the ordinance passed, gun rights supporters challenged the city, arguing that only the state could regulate firearms. Earlier this month, a state judge agreed, ruling that Boulder was prohibited from enforcing its nearly three-year-old assault weapons ban. And as we know, less than 2 weeks later, a man armed with an assault-style weapon walked into Boulder's King Supers and killed 10 people. Heldring says she did not expect to spend her grandmotherly years fighting for what she calls common sense gun reform, but she has no plans to quit.
We have learned a lot over the years that the word grandmother, the archetype grandmother, is a powerful tool in this. It conjures up images of knowledge, wisdom, experience, authority, seniority. And so we are working hard to leverage this construct grandmother, this reality of grandmothers all over the country, to kind of wag our fingers at these slowpoke legislators and say, you know, we're going to be opposing you in your next campaign, and we're going to make sure everybody else is opposing you if you don't start behaving right. You mind your manners and you take care of the public good. So we're doing a lot of work and trying to empower older women and men around the country who maybe have thought, well, you know, my time is over and what good am I anymore, to say, you are not only good, you are precious, and your voice is powerful.
Again, that was Margaret Heldring. She is the founder of Grandmothers Against Gun Violence. The Seattle-based group began with just a few grandmothers and since has grown to a group of about 1,200, with members in 30 different states around the country, including Colorado. It's 8:18. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Since Monday's shooting, Whole Connection, Umbrella Collective, and Naropa Community Counseling Center have come together to address collective trauma response. KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with therapist Philip Horner, who organized support groups for the community. Horner explains that in the days ahead, people will still experience some additional emotions like sadness, anger, frustration, and numbness.
The additional emotions we're going to be experiencing are going to keep fluctuating. There's not going to be one or another. And what is common for us as we start to move through responses like this is for us to freeze, to be in shock, to be numb. These are all very common early on in the experience. And as we do get the chance to actually engage, and not all of us will engage, but those of us who do engage with those emotions, step forward into them, talk with people, we're going to feel tons of sadness, hopelessness, anger, fury, frustration, and we'll probably come back to numbness a few times. And this is going to be cycles. There's not going to be one place we're going to stay. And there's not one place that's going to take the majority of your space. And it is going to look different depending on the person and what they're used to and maybe their past experiences or maybe some of their own trauma that's coming up from it. So I do encourage for people that if this has had a really directly impact or people who have experienced something like this before and they didn't know anyone there, or they maybe were far away, that it could still trigger things. And I highly encourage in those moments, act now. Don't wait a week or two. Find your resources.
This sort of thing makes people feel so helpless, especially because it does not seem to matter how many times it has happened and how many times it will happen again. Yeah. No new laws are passed to control guns. How should people process that feeling of hopelessness?
How to process the hopelessness? Hopelessness is like another emotion. And what I say to everybody, when you're working with emotions, is the best thing to do is to not hide away from them, but to engage them. There's a lot of strength and connection when you share those with other people. One of the most powerful things I believe to happen is not that these facilitators came together and held space. When you're dealing with an emotion, even if it's a anger, not being alone with it. All these emotions are chances for connection. If we welcome that and we have conversations with people close to us, if they're willing, if we're open to therapy, that's a great place to do it too. If we're open to any kind of group environment, then we're able to actually work through it and not let it take us over. And so hopelessness is one of those things that's very easy to just consume us and not let us move forward.
I'm speaking with Philip Horner. He is with Whole Connections. He's a therapist, and he brought a bunch of different therapists from different sectors to provide therapy for the community that has experienced this trauma after the shooting. Are there simple things people can do to help themselves cope?
I'm going to say before I get into the simple things, because I do want to answer your question. Can I answer a question that goes for with it? My question with it is, how do we do the simple things? Because I could list out a lot of things as I do sometimes with my own clients. And then I witness why they don't happen. I joke that if half my clients did all these healthy things that I'm going to list in a minute, half of them might not really need to see me. They'd feel great. They'd not have anxiety or depression, and maybe their relationships would be better. But most of them don't. And that's why they come to see me. It's because they're trying to figure out what's stopping them from actually making shifts and directions and understand their attachments and struggles. Not that they, why are they not doing these healthy things I'm going to name, but what are all the things in their lives that stop them from that? Simple things, we'll name a few, and they're real simple. So I don't want to make people feel like I'm naming things that you should know, but these are things that we all should be doing. But basic exercise, even if that means you go walk outside and get away from the screen, first off, get away from the screen as much as you can. Go walk outside, go on a jog, play with your dog, any kind of movement with your body. If you want the even more benefits from exercise, yeah, they tell you, I think it's 3 days a week, get your heart rate up. It doesn't have to be extensive, just enough to get you moving and feeling better. Sleep. Oh, I cannot say sleep enough to people. If everyone could get the right amount of sleep for them, there is not a number. I want people to know that, you know, everyone says like, oh, 7 to 8, 9, 6 to 8. There's a right amount for each person. It's a little different. But if you could find that and actually keep getting it and get it at a regular time every night, a regular time you wake up, that is going to make such a difference in your life. I can tell you, because I did not get regular sleep the last couple of nights and I feel exhausted, but a lot has happened. eating. I mean, you're seeing how basic some of these simple things are, but it's very easy when we're in a crisis or when we're in a trauma response for us to forget things or do it very differently because we think that's going to make us feel better. And it might for a moment, you know, just for that moment when we avoid a meal or we eat something really bad and we know is not going to make us feel better. We feel pretty bad later. You know, eating a few meals a day, not overeating yourself, making sure you get the right nutrients you need, basic things. And for everybody, it's going to look different. Again, I'm not a nutritionist, so you need to figure out the right thing. And for those who are open to it, there is just massive amounts of now evidence showing how much mindfulness is helpful. And I say open to it because I put that word out there and usually people have lots of strong responses to it. And I actually rarely tell my clients ever to do any mindfulness, but there is plenty of evidence showing how much that will benefit your ability to stay calm and regulated. And that could be just breathing exercises. When I get stressed or even before yesterday's group, I for instance, was the main organizer trying to bring it together. And so I spoke at the beginning when there was 60 of us there, which was shocking and a lot, a very large group. And I was nervous beforehand because I, you know, it's a big thing happening. We're trying to get everyone together to do this. So I just stopped. I breathed a little bit. So these very basic things like that can matter so much, but I cannot emphasize enough the last one, which is engaging with other people. And that means socially. And this is tricky here. We're in the world of COVID right now, and we're all having to take certain precautions. A lot of us can't get the touch we need. A lot of us can't even see people. It's such a different world. But we still can get a lot from a phone call. And I imagine a lot of us have at least one person we can still be close to physically. Even if it's our kid, get a hug. It's amazing what the power of a hug can do. And again, there's research. If you hold a hug for 20 seconds, all these amazing chemicals going on in your brain, they're making you feel better. So I highly encourage people to socially engage, finding ways to get on the phone, find those few people you can be close to, and making sure you ask for some things you need from time to time. Touch, a hug.
Thank you so much, Philip Horner with Whole Connections, speaking to me about the importance of taking care of ourselves and finding ways to connect with others, especially in a moment of a collective trauma that we have all experienced. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
And Whole Connections will sponsor a free drop-in crisis counseling session today at Unity of Boulder Church. That's 2855 Folsom. It starts at 9 o'clock this morning. They'll also have one tomorrow from 11 to 3 p.m. There's no appointment necessary, but masks are required.
Support comes from Colorado Tech Point, a technology store specializing in sales and repair service of verified pre-owned laptops, computers, and mobile devices. Located at 436 Main Street in downtown Longmont. More information at co-techpoint.com or by calling 303-848-3738.
And it's time now for this week's Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Zach Weaver. I'm a creative technologist at Building 61, which is the Boulder Public Library makerspace. Trends Diary wanted to know, why is Building 61 an important resource for the community? And my answer immediately was that we make our community more self-sufficient. The need to invent, design, repair, and create objects for better living is as fundamentally pervasive as language in our lives. The library has always been about free access to language. We're expanding those languages to include the creative act of making things for our world, rather than being consumers alone. That has never been more critical than during the pandemic. And with awesome foresight, that is a big part of what the Boulder Library Foundation and Boulder Public Library leaders envisioned when they launched Building 61 5 years ago. When quarantines and closures began last year, my coworkers, Emily Plotzer, Adam Watts, Robbie Holb, and I were among the first in Boulder to be systematically producing and distributing PPE to frontline workers. We made literally hundreds of sewn masks and 3D printed face shields. Emily's mask making tutorial has been viewed by thousands of people in English and Spanish. The Boulder Rec Centers, as well as Boulder Public Library, have plexiglass shields made by Robbie in our wood shop. All of the resources and training to do those things are available to the public for free, and they will be again with enough mask wearing, hand washing, and vaccinating. We also check out basic equipment like sewing machines to make and mend clothing. People are 3D printing repair parts for home appliances. We host a fix-it clinic in partnership with EcoCycle that has taught thousands of Boulder citizens the art of fixing their own stuff. We exercise the economic right to repair rather than uphold cycles of consumer dependency. The bonus being, it's also really fun and rewarding. Building 61 has also fostered nearly 70 small businesses with prototyping and micro-production, and even partnered with our Small Business Development Center to get them any training they need to form those businesses. Those are personal economies being generated, and they are changing how people see themselves and their futures. Additionally, speaking of futures, we have teen interns come to summer camps. These are often young people who probably had zero expectation of ever going to college, receiving scholarships to local college prep schools where placement is virtually guaranteed. One has earned admission to CU Engineering. So we're also an extension of the community's collective educational resources, particularly in the STEM fields, all right here, all for free at your local library. The Building 61 community, all of the creative technologists, past and present, all of the thousands of patrons over the years, the volunteers, the collaborators, the instructors, we're a catalyst for transforming lives and strengthening the Boulder community through the shared experience of intentional and purposeful making.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.
Support comes from Code Ninjas in Louisville, Colorado, where kids learn to code by building their own video games. Details on camps as well as evening and weekend drop-in hours can be found at codeninjas.com/CO-Louisville.